You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com. We are a part of the Beautiful Game Network and sponsored by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. It is Tuesday, July 27, 2021, at time of recording, and the group stage of the 2020 Tokyo Olympics women's soccer tournament has come to completion. The United States women's national team has officially qualified for the knockout stage. So here to recap what happened in the group stage, what it means, and what we should be thinking about as far as expectations and failures or successes in the knockout stage, my good friend Rachel Krieger. Rachel, hi. It's been a while.
I know. I haven't seen you in forever. Have you gotten taller? Have you cut your hair? I'm being sarcastic.
I have not. I'm one day older since last you saw me. I guess my hair is slightly longer than it was. And that's about it. Rachel, let's get started here. I guess let's start chronologically. Obviously, we have now had another 180 minutes to see how the U.S. Women's National Team bounced back from their shock opening game loss to Sweden. Looking back on that now, we saw it was 3-0. It was a bad performance. I would argue it is the worst performance since there has not been a performance worse since the beginning of World Cup qualification for the 2015 World Cup. So we're talking the entire 2015 World Cup qualifying cycle for the women's national team. We're talking the 2015 World Cup. We're talking the most recent Olympics. We're talking the last World Cup qualification cycle. We're talking about the last World Cup, of which they've won now back to back. And then now through this group stage, the worst loss. So I'll say the worst loss comfortably since calendar year 2013. What do we make of that performance? What do we make of that result? And maybe the reality check that came with it?
Yeah, so Sweden's always kind of been that big, bad, older, younger sister that the U.S. women's national team has had. They met up, at least from off of the top of my head. I might be ignoring some previous years before I started covering the team, so forgive me on that. But they met in the knockouts in the 2015 World Cup. They met again, of course, the infamous match in Rio in 2016. They won on penalty kicks, and everybody remembers Hope Solo's comments calling them cowards. And then they met again in 2019 at the World Cup, and here they are again. Not quite in 2020, but still the 2020 Summer Olympics, they are meeting again in the group stage. And this was kind of the match that it was essentially whoever wins this game is going to win the group. And that's with total respect to New Zealand, who has a ton of fantastic players. It crushed me to see Ali Riley's post today talking about her, you know, just emotions about heading home early. Australia, equally a good team, have had some really tough international matches to start this year, but I'll get to that later. But Sweden was that game that if you win this, you're going to win the group. And lo and behold, Sweden won the game 3-0, and they won the group. So, and Sweden throughout the whole group stage has been so good, but in this match, they just, not only were they really, really good, but they gave other teams a blueprint to how to beat the U.S. women's national team. And I remember because, you know, Trevor Tracy and I are splitting the coverage, and he's kind of taken these 4:30 games because it's a little bit easier for him on the West Coast than it is for me on the East Coast. And I woke up to like 15 messages from him and my friend Dylan and just so many people saying, you've got to wake up and watch this game. Of course, I do not disturb on. I did not watch the game. I watched the replay later. But I was just shocked when I watched the replay, and I wasn't shocked because Sweden won. I was shocked because of how the U.S. lost. There seemingly was no defending. I have been, admittedly so, on this podcast, in my work through Equalizer Soccer, just everywhere, a big critic of Kelly O'Hara. She has not been good in this Olympic group stage. She was awful against Sweden. Abby Dahlkemper has been really off her game too. She wasn't looking good against Sweden. Her game against New Zealand was really, really bad, and we'll get to that in a minute. But the defense was just way too lax. And you don't think about that on a team that has Becky Sauerbrunn, has Crystal Dunn. And Crystal Dunn was the bright spot on that defense. That game could have been 6-0 if it wasn't for Crystal Dunn. So, and the attack was just super lax, lackadaisical. There really wasn't any spark. And, you know, there has to be that question to looking at the roster and saying, okay, well, you've got these really young players who are really good. I mean, Lynn Williams absolutely crushing the NWSL in scoring, and she didn't even dress for the match. And yet they're starting or subbing in players like Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, Tobin Heath has been off in the Olympics. It's just, it doesn't work anymore. And Sweden understands that, and they took the team apart. And the biggest thing that they did was they frustrated them. They frustrated the U.S. women's national team. They gave them a lot of problems. Let's be honest too, Matt. I mean, Alyssa Nair doesn't get anything thrown her way whenever the teams play in friendlies against some weaker teams. And she got rocked in goal. She has not, I would admittedly be a critic of her this season for Chicago. She has not been good in net for Chicago. And yet, because she has been the longtime starting goalkeeper, she does get the starting spot. I think something has to change. I don't really know if it's more that, I'm not saying let's pull Nair out. It's not really the time for that, I don't think. But there needs to be some changes made, and that did kind of happen with starting Tierna Davidson in this last game. But Sweden just basically gave everyone the perfect blueprint for how to beat the U.S. women's national team.
So I look at that and I saw shock, Rachel, and immediately it was, okay, maybe this was the kick up the backside that this national team actually needed. I'm obviously not close enough to the team, and we haven't been able to see what's going on in training, so maybe this was a shock to Vlatko and Nanovsky. I think that's a really interesting question of, hey, did you see this coming? Was the team actually training well? I think are some interesting questions that maybe we'll get some answers to in hindsight after the tournament. But looking ahead, the question that I then had, well, first of all, you lose your first group stage, and that immediately puts you behind the eight ball for being one of the, you know, for being one of the two out of four teams that qualify out for the knockout stage. And so immediately I just wanted to see from a result standpoint, to say nothing of performance, could they actually bounce back? They do that against New Zealand, albeit against a team that on talent wise is inferior. Six different goal scorers in the 6-1 victory, albeit one of those goals being an own goal. I mean, was that it was a necessary result. I think it was necessary from a goal difference and from a confidence standpoint. But, you know, again, does it paper over some of the issues? How much of it do we take into, yes, this is a talented team against a not so talented team versus job done, moving on, let's talk about Australia.
I think the game against New Zealand, it definitely answered a few questions. I don't think it answered all the questions because, like you said, the opponent was inferior. I think it was a good confidence boosting game. That's what they needed. They needed something where they could score just a crap ton of goals and build themselves up a little bit to go into this Australia game, because you got to think about too, Australia got a result in the first week, so they were kind of neck and neck right there for that second place spot. And Australia is a good team, so the United States wanted to get a bunch of goals so they could edge out Australia on goal differential or whatever the case may be. I think you saw some really good stuff in the midfield in that game. The defense was still a little bit shaky, I think, in my opinion. I thought the attack looked much better. I thought Rose Lavelle looked really good. I thought Lindsay Horan in her 100th cap, which is mind-boggling to me that she already has 100 caps. I thought she looked really good as well. Megan Rapinoe looked much better. Tobin Heath had a couple good balls. And whenever Kristen Press went into the game, she looked much, much better than she did in the Sweden game. So what the U.S. needed in that game against New Zealand was a bunch of goals to help them on goal differential and just a confidence boosting win for them. And I think they got that.
So let's move on to ultimately the decisive game for the U.S. in terms of qualifying out of the group. And that was earlier this morning against Australia. And it ended up being a 0-0 draw, which was good enough on point totals for the U.S. to actually get out of the group. But Rachel, kind of the you know, again, I think the narrative is informed based on what had happened. So we thought, okay, you know, put the Sweden game behind us. Let's look ahead to New Zealand, get the job done, get it by a flattering scoreline, which they did, albeit the performance could have been a little bit better. And then you think, okay, if they beat Australia and beat them handily, it's okay. The Sweden game was an aberration, or it was a necessary gut check for them. I think in the same way, I feel really bad about to make this comparison, but like what's going on with Greg Popovich and USA basketball on the men's side right now with the preseason tournaments, the preseason friendlies that they had, or the pre-tournament friendlies they had, and then losing to France, I think is just further confirmation that I'm not sure this group, like this group might not medal, and I definitely don't think that they're going to win gold. So I feel weird making that comparison, but it was okay. Could they continue the upward trajectory from the Sweden and the New Zealand game to actually get a result, get it that's flattering against a better opponent, and then at least feel better going into the knockout stage, even if ultimately you couldn't win the group and you had a not favorable matchup in the quarterfinals? And ultimately we didn't get that. And while the, you know, I'm almost more upset or more frustrated or more alarmed by this performance than I am the one against Sweden, because you figure, okay, like that was so uncharacteristic. They were, you know, everybody was so unbelievably bad. You know, it was crystal done, and then nobody was doing anything. It was so uncharacteristic of this team that you figured, okay, that was an aberration. That was not who they are. They have to bounce back. But then in this game, they did not play the way that they wanted to. I don't think that they were on the front foot enough, and they seemed to be content for a draw. And that is not the same team that we've seen from a mentality standpoint, from a killer instinct standpoint, that ran up 13 goals on Thailand and were basically, you know, Megan Rapinoe and everybody walked into the Paris International Airport 2 summers ago and said, "We are the Queens. You come at the Queens. You best not miss." And this was a performance that honestly showed them playing small or playing scared and safe of, let's just get through the group and everything. And that reeks of, you know, a team that's like backing into the playoffs that we've seen in other sports that does not bode well for them in the knockouts. Rachel, am I catastrophizing what was ultimately a black game?
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm so tired of hearing this crap about, oh, well, they did it so they could rest Rapinoe and Julie Ertz and Tobin Heath. I don't want to hear that crap because they didn't do that in 2016. Yes, there is obviously roster rotation, but especially with the way that they were seeded on the group stage, if they didn't score those goals against New Zealand, they would be sitting in third place. Albeit they still would have gone through over Zambia, but still, they would have been sitting in third place. Australia would be sitting in second. So the fact that they were just like, oh yeah, we'll settle for a draw, no big deal, whatever. Australia has Sam Kerr. They played so deep. They played so lackadaisical. And they know that Australia is just an incredible team on the counterattack. And yet they sat back and they just waited and they got pummeled and pummeled. And the scoreline might have been 0-0. But honestly, I think if you look at it from just a effort type of standpoint, Australia wins that game for me. They were the better team in that game. The stats were pretty much even for the most part, but I think Australia, like, they were pushing. They wanted to win that game. They wanted to get 3 points and put the United States in third place. I can't imagine right now what would have happened if Australia beat them. Like, that would have been Australia, like I had mentioned earlier, they have had a really, really bad 2021. Before heading into the Olympics, they had 5 friendlies, 4 losses, 1 draw. That's not the Australian team that we're used to. I mean, they have Sam Kerr, come on. So for them to not get 3 points over a weak Australia side is just mind-blowing to me. And I never thought I would go into a game with the USA and with Australia and say, oh yeah, the US should get an easy 3 points here. And they didn't. They drew. They sat back. They were content. They were lackadaisical. It honestly, and I don't know, Matt, I don't know if this is harsh or fair or whatnot. They just look like they, aside from Alex Morgan's little, you know, head shake, I don't know if you saw that at the end. She obviously looked disappointed, but they just seemed like they didn't care. And that's crazy. You said it perfectly about the mentality. They have beaten it into their own heads. They've had it beaten into their own heads by coaches. And I don't think this is Vlatko doesn't care. I don't think that's the issue here. I just think that the instinct, it's like, all right, we'll just settle for less. We'll make it to the knockouts. I really don't know what else to say, but this crap about, oh, well, they were just doing it so they could rest players. You're still playing 90 minutes of soccer. What do you mean resting players? You're still playing soccer and you got to play again on Friday. So I don't want to hear this stuff about resting players. I don't know. That was a weird rant.
It's been a weird day and a weird tournament so far. So Rachel, you and others in the WOZO media space have kind of pointed out some of the key flaws or the thinking that Vlatko and the coaching staff had in selecting this roster and how that thinking could have been flawed or how, you know, ultimately it was relying on, you know, there was going to come a point if Jerry Krause and the ownership of the Chicago Bulls decided to retain Michael Jordan and everybody to the point where they were going to lose at some point in the playoffs, or they were going to miss the playoffs. You know, on some level, you know, there is kind of how the U.S. Women's National Team has handled this in terms of holding on to players over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, going back to the World Cup, obviously in this tournament. And then there's like the Patriot way is on the other end of the spectrum, where as soon as a guy is not immediately at his peak level of productivity for us, or we have to pay him for the productivity that he's given, he's going to go into free agency looking for a payday based on what he's done rather than the value that he will bring us in the future, we cut bait. So those are kind of, you know, those are two-ish ends of the spectrum there. And so I guess I'm wondering, you know, just based on the roster, how it was constructed, based on the concerns that we had about players being unattached, players not playing regularly for their club teams, players coming in potentially hurt, your point about maybe some of the game day decisions has been because of those complications going in there, of whether or not we should have seen this coming. And I mean, you know, we knew dynasties fall, right? So, you know, eventually eventually Tom Brady is not going to be, you know, a Super Bowl favorite. Eventually, you know, he is going to miss the playoffs or lose in the Super Bowl or lose in the playoffs or just be so old and his team's going to be so bad that he's no longer going to be one of the best, most dominant quarterbacks in crunch time in the NFL. And so I look at this and eventually this was going to come down. The U.S. was not going to win a World Cup. They were not going to win an Olympics. The world was going to finally catch them, given that over the course of the last two World Cup cycles, the women's game internationally at the club level, federations have been putting more money, resources, more teams and everything to the point where they have been able to catch up. Look at where England, or Great Britain, rather, in this tournament is relative to where they were a decade ago with everything that has happened inside the British Isles as far as the women's club game is concerned. And so I guess I'm wondering, is it time to hit the panic button? Could we have seen this coming? And kind of ultimately, like, was this something that was inevitable that it was going to happen, but the federation and the coaching staff and the roster selection, the players collectively have accelerated to the point where this is something to where this inevitable downfall of the women's national team no longer being this domineering, swashbuckling force that takes on all comers and destroys all comers, and now that comes crashing down or has the potential to come crashing down, could this have been avoided by some of the decisions that Vlatko and Donofsky made from a personnel standpoint?
I think the panic button is an interesting conversation because even if the U.S. loses against the Netherlands, who they play on Friday in the quarterfinal, I think that no matter what happens after this Olympics, Vlatko's going to be putting players through the colander and sifting out players who are either going down the drain or staying in the colander. That was a weird analogy. But I just cooked, so whatever. Whether they win or lose, I guess I should say, that's what's going to happen either way. There are players who you have to think, this has certainly got to be their last Olympics. They haven't come out and said it, but I mean, Carly Lloyd, granted, you know, Formiga is still playing and this is her 7th Olympics. But Carly Lloyd's getting up there in age. I think Tobin Heath, this could be her last Olympics. I think this is definitely the last Olympics for Pino. It could very well be the last Olympics for Becky Sauerbrunn and Alyssa Nair. I don't think the panic button is necessary, whether they win or they lose, because I know that Vlatko has a plan to... this is going to be a totally different roster come World Cup qualifying, and eventually the World Cup if they do qualify, which they probably will qualify. So I don't know if the panic button is necessary quite yet. I do think there's going to be a lot of screaming and yelling if they lose to the Netherlands. But, you know, I read an article somewhere... I don't remember who wrote it, but the line was, if the U.S. wins a gold medal, you can just forget about the group stage. Like, the group stage doesn't matter, which I don't necessarily agree with, because they still look like crap in the group stage, let's be honest. Aside from the four goals that they scored against New Zealand, they look like crap. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think the panic button is necessary right now, because I think Vlatko does have a plan. And that's another thing too. Even if the U.S. loses to the Netherlands, Vlatko's not going anywhere. There's no way. They're keeping him through World Cup qualifying. And through the World Cup, I should say.
Well said there, Rachel. I guess let's look ahead to the Netherlands, an opponent who women's national team fans will be familiar with, as obviously they were the opponent in the Women's World Cup final just over 2 years ago. Rachel, how is this team different, and obviously a team that looked very impressive in the group stage? I mean, to your point about the panic button and about how, you know, results can kind of fill narratives going on in there, and ultimately, you know, the women's national team is here for results, and the biggest result they can get is break the record and being the first team to ever go back to back in terms of winning a Women's World Cup and then winning a gold medal at the following Olympics and everything. What do we see in the Netherlands? And you know, are the U.S. seriously an underdog here for the first time since, I want to say, at least maybe the 2011 Women's World Cup?
Yeah, I think both teams in a way are kind of underdogs, because there's a lot of people that are just clapping on the Netherlands in this tournament. They had a very crazy first match with Zambia. Major shout out, by the way, to Zambia's Barbara Bana, who had two hat tricks and just lit it up in the group stage. She's definitely going to Europe this upcoming season, or this winter. But Netherlands won 10-3 in that game. They drew in a crazy 3-3 game with Brazil, and then they won against China today, 8-2. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, they played Zambia, and oh, well, they played China. But I mean, I think people forget China's a good team. They consistently qualify for the World Cup in a tough AFC conference. So they're a good team, and they just haven't had the best showing here at the Olympics, just like the United States has not had the best showing at the Olympics. So I think both teams in a way are kind of the underdog, because the U.S., this is obviously one of the worst group stage performances they have ever had in a major tournament. And a lot of people are just questioning the Netherlands. Oh, are they actually legit because of the games and the matchups they had to play? But the Netherlands, I mean, to me, there is no one better in the world striker-wise than Vivian Miedema. And she is going to be a problem for the United States. And she, I mean, like I said earlier, Sweden gave all of these teams the blueprint for how to beat the U.S. So if the Netherlands want to win, they just got to look back at that game. Now, I think it's interesting because everybody's saying, oh, well, it's the World Cup final rematch. Well, it's also a little bit – there was something in between that too. They played in a friendly in the Netherlands back in November, so just, what, 8 months ago, and the U.S. won 2-0, the same scoreline as the World Cup final. So I think a lot has changed between – November 2020 and July. I almost forgot what month it was. July 2021. So, I mean, the Netherlands are a much better team. There's absolutely no doubt about it. They are very well coached. The United States are also very well coached, but they are kind of, I don't know, they're just kind of on the downhill side right now. And you got to wonder, is there a lot of second guessing with the U.S. because of the results in this tournament? So I don't know. I think both teams are kind of an underdog. I think if anything, that match is going to be kind of like a sludge fest. Like it's going to be, like I said last night when we were talking about some of the Gold Cup games coming up, it's just going to be weird soccer.
Let's move on to some NWSL roundtable news, Rachel. It's been a while since, I guess, I don't know how to say it, like on the main pod, but you, me, and Dan talking mostly MLS since we have addressed things going on in the NWSL. We've had a lot of news this past week, including a lot of really big decisions on the coaching front.
Yeah, the NWSL has quite the coaching carousel going around right now. Fareed Benstidi was, I don't want to say the word fired because he wasn't fired. He parted ways with OL Reign. They've been wildly inconsistent this year, so he parts ways. Sam Lady, who has been there since the club has been around in 2013, took over as interim head coach. And very shocking to me, I never expected this because I thought she was pretty happily set within. She was coaching the I don't remember which youth national team it was. Maybe U23s, U17s, but Laura Harvey is back in the NWSL, and she's back with the Reign. She was with the Reign for many, many years, and then her and Vlatko Andonovski kind of swapped, and he went to Reign. She went to Utah Royals, which was formerly FC Kansas City. Giant craziness of NWSL clubs. But Laura Harvey, she knows the Reign. She knows the players. She knows Jess Fishlock. She knows Lou Barnes. She has coached against players like Bethany Balser and Ziera King, and she is one of the better coaches. I think she coached. No, I lied. She didn't coach Ziera King. That was Craig Harrington. But she is one of the better coaches. She's a wildly incredible with analytics and analysis and stuff like that. And it was actually between her and Vlatko Andonovski for the U.S. Women's National Team job. So Laura Harvey's back in the NWSL. She's back with the Reign. I don't think she's with the Reign for maybe two more games. I think Lady is still in charge. But she's going to be there soon. It's either one or two more games and then she'll be back. And then another coaching departure, Mark Skinner. He is going to Manchester United. That hasn't been officially announced, but it's basic. They're just kind of waiting for the official announcement. He is from England. His family still lives in England. His partner used to play on the Lionesses, Laura Bassett, and he has always mentioned that it's tough for him, especially last year with the pandemic when his child and Laura Bassett weren't able to come with him and be with him in Orlando. It was hard for him, and he had mentioned before that he would try to come home, and that's what he's going to be doing. They also tabbed Carl Green, who was his assistant in Orlando. They were together at Birmingham. They were together at Pride. Now they're going back to England together, and he was actually the interim for one day head coach when the Pride lost to Orlando. The Orlando Pride lost to OL Reign this past weekend. But they hired Becky Burley as their interim head coach. They just said, listen, she's going to take us through the 2021 season. She coached for, I think, 26 years, at the University of Florida, for the Gators. And she retired back in February from coaching collegiate soccer. They were able to bring her in for the year. A lot of people were saying, well, maybe she could fight for a spot as the permanent head coach. I think since she retired in the beginning of the year, that might not be something that's on her radar. Maybe the Pride just said, hey, listen, you're a well-decorated coach. You are a successful coach. We were really, really good at the start of the season. Now they're not doing so hot. I think they're on like a 5-game non-winning streak. There's like 4 losses and 1 draw or something like that. Just get us to where we need to be. Because at the beginning of the season, if you asked me who was going to win, I probably would have said the Orlando Pride. They look solid. And they only lost 4 internationals to the Olympics, albeit those are big names, Marta, Alex Morgan, Allie Riley, and who am I forgetting? Erin McLeod. So those are big names. Those are names that help. But Becky Burley's kind of there to turn it around, if you will. Casey Stoney, there's really not much to say here. She was named the head coach of the new San Diego team. Molly Downtain, who was I don't remember her exact role, but she was kind of a player operations type role with U.S. Soccer. She worked with Jill Ellis, who's the president of the new San Diego club. But Casey Stoney, former Manchester United manager, going to NWSL. So there's really not much going on there right now until we start talking about expansion drafts and stuff like that. But it's cool to see Casey Stoney in the NWSL. She also has amazing coats, but it's very hot in California, so I don't know if she'll be wearing those. And then the last thing, this was a big one, and it was very out of the blue, very random, and I have to say, I was reading transcript from these players' comments, especially Kristen Hamilton, about just the brutal honesty of what it's like to be traded at a moment's notice in any professional sport and in the NWSL. And it was very honest and very powerful. But before I get into that, Kristen Hamilton, Haley Mason, Caitlin Rowlin were traded from the North Carolina Courage to Kansas City. And then the Courage got Amy Rodriguez and a little bit of allocation money as well. It's kind of, I want to know what that allocation money is going to go towards before I judge the trade, because as talented and wildly successful as Amy Rodriguez is, it's mind-boggling to me that Paul Riley would give up those three players for a 34-year-old striker. Maybe Rodriguez will fit in better in the system in North Carolina and she'll score a bunch of goals. But like I said, I want to wait and see what that allocation money is going to go to. But back to Kristen Hamilton, she gave a really raw and honest answer about what it's like to be traded. She, you know, paraphrasing, she had said, listen, it's tough. It's one day you're training with your teammates and the next day you're packing your bags and going to a new city. And she said, I'm going to embrace Kansas City. I'm excited to be here, but it's just hard for me to process that I'm not with the Courage anymore. So it was a very good answer. I'll have to send Matt the link to put it in the show notes, but it was a very good answer. And I just wish all of them the best with their new clubs, especially Hamilton and Rowland, because I can't say too much about Haley Mace, but Caitlin Rowland to me always got the short end of the stick because she started and won in at least two championship games with the Western New York Flash, which then became the North Carolina Courage, and with the Courage. And then more popular names come in and she kind of gets pushed to the side. And she's a good goalkeeper. So I think she could be a starter in Kansas City because Nicole Barnhart and Abby Smith aren't really cutting it right now.
I think that does it for all of our NWSL and I guess retroactive coverage of the Olympics. Rachel, shall we look ahead to the knockout stage?
Let's do it.
So with the group stage, folks, we break down into quarterfinals rather than a round of 16. All four of these games will actually take place on Friday, July 30th. And I should say that is the same calendar date, regardless of time zone in the continental United States. These games will be taking place. Kickoffs will be anywhere from 4 a.m. Eastern time and 7 a.m. Eastern time. It's Canada versus Brazil, Great Britain, Australia, Sweden, Japan, and then the aforementioned U.S. versus Netherlands game. I guess that's the most reasonable kickoff that we have, Rachel, because it's the one that's the latest in the day. So 7 a.m. on a Friday, I think, is the most humane kickoff time that we've had in the Eastern time zone. And I guess for once I have one that's not basically like smack dab in the middle of my REM cycle and everything. So not sure that I'll be, I don't know that I want to get up at 5 a.m. given, I don't know if you know this, Rachel, but I posted on Twitter me wearing the Colorado Rapids Class 5 14er kit because I woke up at 3:30 in the morning this past Sunday to go climb Mount Quandary, which was fantastic, but also exhausting. So I guess hopefully I look forward to the USA versus Netherlands being exhausting and fantastic by the end of the game at a reasonable hour. But in any case, Rachel, your thoughts, let me get your thoughts generally on what we look at with the bracket in the quarterfinals. And then, of course, your prediction of Netherlands, United States, 7 a.m. Eastern time on Friday, the 30th of July.
Well, the bracket makes me happy and it makes me sad because heading into the tournament, I said I wanted Brazil to win. I thought Brazil was going to win because I want Martin Formiga to get a gold medal. I wanted Netherlands and Brazil in the final. And that probably, well, according to the bracket, that's not going to happen. So I think they're very good matchups. I think the kind of underlying matchup to look at is Canada and Brazil. I think that's going to be a really good game. Canada has been decent. They haven't been great in the Olympic group stage, and Brazil has been pretty solid for the most part. That Sweden-Japan game, I think Sweden comfortably wins that. Great Britain and Australia, that could be a toss-up. Great Britain has looked pretty good, but I don't know. Australia just needs that one good counterattack, and they could win the whole thing. But I think it's a good bracket. I think it's a nice set of games. And gosh, I mean, who could have imagined a World Cup final rematch in the quarterfinals? But for the U.S. Netherlands, like Matt said when talking about Rapinoe, come at me, you're going to get it or whatever. Netherlands wins this, I think, 2-0. I think they get revenge, and U.S. has just looked sloppy. I don't think they're going to get a goal. Netherlands know how to beat them, and I think they are going to beat them. They just look too good, and oh my gosh, Viv Miedema. I could be wrong, but I don't think Miedema played in that game in November 2020. So I think she's just going to unleash all of her anger and all of her frustration in of that World Cup final. And I think she's just going to go out there and, in the PG way, kick butt and take names.
I'm going to pick with my heart in this one, Rachel. And so, you know, the theme of this week, for both men's and women's national team has been ugly, disjointed, but, you know, in that competitive soccer, I think the U.S. wins a nail-biting 2-1. It's going to be an ugly garbage goal that ultimately wins it. I'm not sure that they're going to deserve it on the performance, but I do think the U.S. advances in regular time 2-1 over the Netherlands in the quarterfinals. Let's move on. Rachel, anything else, or shall we get to last words?
I think we're good for last words, buddy.
Okay. Rachel, you have a question that you'd like to ask me and all the listeners. And then, of course, tell our dear listeners where they can find you on the various socials and your coverage. And do you have any last words other than that?
Hey, Matt, are you tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas? Are you looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team? Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price with the motto, any design you want. Seriously, let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. My Twitter is at Rachel Krieger. I will be live tweeting the game because, huzzah, it's not at 4 a.m. On both my account and the Last Word on Soccer account on Friday. It's probably the last one I'm going to do unless the, you know, U.S. makes the final, although, albeit, I think we're going to tweet the final anyway, no matter who's in it at Last Word on Soccer, because it's a big game. Because the next game, I certainly will hand it off to Trevor Tracy because I will be working. So I'm excited. It's going to be an interesting game. I am half tempted to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning for the early games, but I'm not going to do that. So best of luck to everyone. I just hope everyone has fun and nobody gets hurt and Brazil wins.
Yeah, I have I think this was a joke with Canada. I don't remember in what sport or what league, Rachel, but it was, I hope both teams have fun. So, you know, I guess I hope both teams have fun. And, to quote my inner Rashid Wallace, I hope both teams play hard. I don't want a stinker like the Sweden game, regardless of the result or who ends up being the Sweden and who ends up being the United States in that analogy. Listeners, I want to thank our other sponsor, Roughneck Scarves. They are an official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. You can get custom scarves, summer scarves, neck gaiters, and non-medical masks for your group, team, or office at roughneckscarves.com. Follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. As Rachel said, check out all of our content all year long at lastwordonsports.com/soccer and on the socials, including our live tweeting of the various big national team games coming up in the next few days at LastWordSC and across all social media platforms at LastWordSC. Rate, review, share, subscribe. Wherever you get your podcast, just search LWS Radio. You'll find us and a bunch of other great content from our Last Word on Sports family. Listeners, we'll probably see you sometime Friday, maybe Saturday, as we look ahead to the Gold Cup final and the aftermath from the semifinals. And, of course, talking about what hopefully isn't a disappointing exit for the U.S. women's national team in the quarterfinals of the Olympics. We'll see you then.